All right, for whoever's listening, happy graduation day. Mm-hmm. And we're going to just start out with the quote today. So we'll lead with the quote. And that is, people don't decide their future. People don't decide their future. They decide their habits, and their habits decide their future. So you always like a lovely, profound quote that you can hopefully remember for a little bit, which is kind of the theme of our closing out lesson. Memory. So, you know, we started this course, and it was a course on habits, and just reviewing, very first class, we had you write down the phrase, the quality of your thinking determines the quality of your life. And that was a phrase that's been with me since college, and that was given to me by my monk mentor, which we had put in the book we talked about, Father Dennis Mead. Father Dennis Mead sadly passed away this week. And so we kind of know that when we have these mentors that are older, you know, they're gonna go home eventually. And so it was kind of a sad, melancholy week for me. But 70 years a monk. Think about that. You know, we've mentioned what wisdom is, and you know, I've reflected a lot about him this week. But when you even talk about a habit. And you talk, you know, you think about the monks, and I've used the monks all the time as examples. Even what they wear is called a habit. And it's hilarious when you think about it, but I actually, when I was researching habits a while back, there's actually a YouTube channel for monks. I had no idea. I was just laughing because I was looking up habits, and I saw that that link. But, you know, it really talked about the habit itself is part of their, the symbolism is, you know, when I put a habit on, I'm putting on the cloak of obedience or whatever it is that they're studying at that time, the different colors of the habits, why they wear their wrists and why their hands are covered. You know, why is it white? Well, white is because, you know, you're starting out, you're new. Why is it black? What does the belt signify? Well, the belt signifies a binding contract or a covenant with God for them. And so, you know, there's great symbolism even in what we wear as a habit for those guys. But really the thing that I wanted to mention because of Father Dennis was those eight magic words we talked about. And that was part of one of our lessons. And you might remember the eight magic words, everything you do must be done with love. And so I brought that one up to summarize here again because just yesterday, was it yesterday we went up to see the opening?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, seems like a while ago. So for those of you that don't know, we're going to visit John Helm opening. And this is significant because John Helm has now 19 stores. This was the 100th store in New Jersey. But his dad, who was a pastor, passed away last month, actually on Easter. So, I mean, you know you're living right. If you're a pastor, you preach a message and you die on that day in your home, on your chair. But I bring that up because we went up and John Helm had said a prayer in front of us. We surprised him with 20-plus people from the office, and he was pretty well touched by that. But at the end, the point is he said, man, I love you guys. And it was, you know, how many companies can you get away with that? You know, where you can actually say a prayer in a group and then say, I love you guys. And when their founder, I mean, that's his company, but then Peter, who's our founder, said, hey, really love that. You can do more of that. So, and that circles back really to our last habit, and you remember habit number 7, which was the habit of renewal, sharpen the saw. But really, we left that heart component pretty open. And so John Helm kind of reminded me that, yeah, sometimes you have to use that word love more. We have to examine the heart, reflect on the heart. And so the first challenge I'm going to have you do, and I know a couple of you have done this a time or two, but on my website, if you look on reflections, you'll find a little reflection on there called Everything Starts with the Heart. So I dare you to check that out. And there are just about 20 quotes and passages about what the heart means. And I was inspired to do that a while back because I just had a question on Confucianism. And, you know, you've heard of Buddhism, Confucianism, studied Eastern religions, but really it's been such a long time, you don't remember a lot of stuff. And it was because Confucius had a quote that says, wherever you go, go with all your heart. And I really liked that one and picked that one up and then looked at the difference again between Confucianism and kind of funny what Eastern religion, you know, I mean, some similarities, some differences. But that inspired just the reflection to come out with everything starts with the heart. And so John, thank you, John Helm, and what he's doing, part of our company. But I want to switch over now and focus on the mind a little bit as we're finishing up. And we start off thinking about, you know, you really have to understand how the brain works if you're going to form a habit. And we use the word neuroplasticity. So that's a good word to remember. It's in the research now. You almost can't pick up any book about the brain unless you talk about and hear about neuroplasticity. Remember, that was the mental athlete. I call it the mathlete. And I was just with, you know, our person that received the Bob Hoffman Scholarship Award. She was pretty funny. I said, hey, what sports do you do? And she says, I don't. I was like, oh, man, I knew I should ask that question differently. But I said, you know, you're a mathlete then, aren't you? She goes, yes, I am. I'm very good in calculus. And, you know, it was just kind of like this. You know, you love that kind of idea, but that's really what we're talking about with the brain. We've got to spend time training the brain. And, you know, we talked about mental, you know, the different exercises you can do, the apps that are out there. And we don't want the brain to atrophy, and yet we see it happen all the time. So how did we prevent that? We said we started to memorize stuff. We want to memorize stuff. And I love just saying memorize stuff because I know there's a quote I'm going to use, and it says, hey, if you want to get smarter, you got to memorize stuff. So I'm not the only one that uses that word. But what are we memorizing? We're talking about names. We talked about numbers, poems, and even prayers. And I laugh at that because I just enrolled my 5-year-old daughter in St. Peter's down the road. And part of the deal is she's got to memorize the Our Father. And, well, that's, you know, you think about, well, when did we do that? And, yeah, we have to memorize prayers. We have to memorize stuff. We don't remember half the stuff we've memorized that we can just click into. And so that's the other challenge is how do we start challenging ourselves to memorize stuff? And, you know, I also talk about songs when we're talking about our habits and lead off the habits with a video that the gal singing the habits. I think everyone in this room has seen that. How do we remember stuff? We remember songs. So don't forget that's a powerful thing that even Martin Luther, who was really, you know, at that time of the printing press, all those books that he printed were most of his songs, most of the music that these guys could listen to and memorize. And again, you know, the memorization theory and the memorization practice used to be a really virtuous endeavor. And it's kind of like losing its power as we get through this each generation. But yet we see throughout history the ability to memorize is associated with wisdom. And so whatever value that is for us, and I'm just going to read a quick handout here. Whoops, maybe I am. Here we go. This was when the brain best remembers things that are repeated, rhythmic, rhyming, structured, all things easily visualized. The principles of these monks who originally studied these discovered they sharpened their stories by telling and retelling the same stories with the mnemonic principles. Words that rhyme are much more memorable than words that don't. They're memorable static images. The most useful of all mnemonic tricks were employed through song. And so we think about that. And I think about some of the poems I've really memorized were helped, really done with song. But, you know, one of the things we talk about is how that is important in our lives to memorize stuff. And I'm going to follow my notes here and say that if we do challenge ourselves, we can go all the way back to the eighth grade. I'm thinking, when was the first thing I started memorizing stuff? And I can go as far back as the eighth grade in Mr. Peterson's class. And stay with me if you've ever done a mnemonic memorization. We had to memorize the presidents. Something tells me they're not doing that in school these days. So that was part of the deal to pass some history test. And so who can memorize, who knows all the presidents? Probably nobody. But, you know, we did it through a song. And we did it through the mnemonic And it went like this. Washington and Jefferson made money, and Jack Adams hurried to paint the first Pilgrim boat. let John get his gun and chase his mother right to where her chair has ruined the elevator key just now. Now, if you started out each one of those Washington and Jefferson, Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, every first letter of those, that song, was a president. You can go back and probably haven't done that repetition since the eighth grade, but it's just one of those, you know, what's important for you. But even if I never did it, it's just the brain training. What are we doing to train our minds? And again, that's the challenge. And that leads us next where we say, okay, got to talk about reading. But first, now I'm going to read something else from another book. And this is from a brain book. Peter of Ravenna, a leading 5th century Italian jurist, also a 15th century leading self-promoter, authored one of the first successful memory training books called The Phoenix. It was translated into several languages, reprinted across Europe. It was the most famous of all memory treatises created in the 13th century and onward that helped pass along memory techniques that have been only for scholars and monks throughout the world. Now, doctors, lawyers, tradesmen, everyday folks who wanted to remember stuff have learned the easy ways to do so. And they've used this art of memory in gambling. That's pretty funny. How to use it to keep track of debt. How to memorize the contents of ships. How to memorize names of acquaintances. Playing cards. And Peter, for his part, bragged of having memorized 20,000 legal points. So he worked in that profession. 1,000 texts by Ovid. 200 Cicero speeches and sayings. 300 sayings of philosophers. 7,000 texts of scripture, as well as a host of other classical works. So just wanted to throw that in there to say, hey, well, we don't have to do that. But when I read that, I thought, why would you memorize a speech? I mean, why would you? Well, and I thought again, back to the eighth grade. Anybody remember how the Gettysburg Address starts?
Four score and seven.
Yeah, you know, we know a lot of this stuff that is back in the brain, but we've never really retrieved it. And the research is telling us that the brain remembers everything that you see and memorize, everything you want to memorize. It's like a computer. It doesn't forget it. We just don't know how to retain it. We don't know how to retrieve it because we don't learn it and nobody's taught it. We're not doing that in school. Very, very, you know, on small levels, I'm thinking. So that leads us now, I want to take us on a little turn just on a discussion on reading. So when we look up the word reading in Latin, know again, and it's almost like we have this knowledge. When we're reading, we know again. And Socrates, Plato, these old ancient Greek philosophers, their names kept coming up because when writing became popular, they weren't very happy with that. So here these were, you know, the cultural age leaders of really memorization. And what they were saying was that writing and reading will kind of retard your memorization because now you're relying on this book or this writing. And if we write stuff down, it's stuff I already know. But is it reinforcing? So there was a lot of controversy and when those guys were... They feared, though, the eventual breakdown of the culture would lead to intellectual and moral decay. I really got a chuckle out of that until I was reading something recently that talked about because of technology, we don't have to remember anything. And the two words we say today is Google it. And, you know, it is kind of funny, but not as, you know, but not so much, especially when you're talking to a five-year-old and she says, Google it, Dad. So that's kind of weird. 2007 study by a neuropsychologist at Trinity College Dublin saw that one-third of the Brits interviewed under age 30 can't remember their own home phone numbers. 30% of adults can't remember birthdays of more than 3 immediate families. Few of us retain what we read. We leaf through the books, we don't study them, but a good habit is to write a few facts in the back of the book or some thoughts or critical judgment of the book. I like to pass that along and call that the one-pager. And so I look at some of the books on the desk, and the other day somebody said, have you read all these books? And it's like, well, yeah, why would you not read the books? But, you know, I'm just kind of teasing a little bit. But a lot of the books you can't really reference unless you've really written a one-pager on it. Well, what does that book mean? And I'll look at this book and say, oh, The Art of Leadership. Well, that's by Milker Wolf. Well, here are the three things that I take away from him. He really explained why listening is such an important thing. He really talked about what benevolence is. And so just a few words that are the sound bites that go with that book. And so that is one way we say it's not just reading a book. We're not just reading books to read books. But we need to study them a little bit more. How do they apply to the life? What do they mean to you? Females seem to have more emotion attached to the book than males. But what does the book, what's the purpose of that? And so I think that's just a good habit to do when you're writing a book, reading a book rather, because it might bring you to do some more. And as you remember, we talked about one of the most popular traits of any entrepreneur or leader is to read. So the one pager. I'm actually talking about maybe starting a new project here, a book club that's not just a normal book club. You're not reading, we're not going to read the same book, but we're all going to read different books and then do a one pager on it and present that at a certain different time. So stay tuned for that one. I want to take us to another segment and just talk about that reading again and the habits of the leader. Just want to review habits if you're taking notes or if you're listening to this. This was a compilation of a speech did to a high school class here not long ago about entrepreneurism and the habits of entrepreneurs when you're researching all these guys and gals. And so here are a few. What do our real entrepreneurs do? Well, they read. So we already talked about that. They read every day. They don't watch TV. They don't mindlessly surf the internet. They control their emotions. That's a good one. We talk about self-control. Why? What is that? One of the fruits of the Spirit. Well, self-control, you know, when we lose our emotions, we lose a lot more than we lose our poise. They network and volunteer regularly. Set goals, not dreams. I think we had a little segment on that. You know, if we're not setting goals, just a dream. They avoid procrastination. They talk less and listen more. They get a mentor. Well, I didn't make that one up. Among the wealthy, 93% who had a mentor attributed a mentor to their success. 93%. They know they didn't do it alone. I hate that phrase, self-made. If you're saying self-made, I think you're setting yourself up to fail. Because really nobody's self-made. They eliminate bad luck from their vocabulary. You think about that one. Yeah, woe is me, the bad luck that, you know, that's just going down the wrong path, I think. They find purpose in life. And we'll leave it with that. Find purpose in life. We talk about the blue zones in the world where people live to past 100. They're happy all the time. And in most of these cultures, they don't have a word for retirement. And they have this word for purpose in most different languages, why they get up. And even in our brain books, I'd like to read this. An experiment of having a higher sense of purpose stimulates oxytocin in the body, as does trust. So with oxytocin release, we get happiness. So joy on the job comes from doing purpose-driven work with a trusted team. Do we have that? Joy on the job. Chemical. It's all chemical. So you might even say that habits are chemical. I'm not gonna dig into that part of the science. Probably get into big trouble. But I would like the group to have a quick evaluation, just three questions. Three questions, they're pretty easy. The top takeaway you had from the course, please name the top takeaway. Number two, what would you change? You you want to mention a poem, that's okay. Would you take another similar course? Those are the three questions. And then please email me those answers, and you'll get a lovely diploma, and it will be laminated. And I will mail it to you, so I'll need mailing addresses for those of you on the calls, which we'll get. So we're going to finish up with a poem. Why not? Why not with a poem? And this is one I found this year that I love. It's anybody from Missouri gets this one for free. It's called the Show Me Poem. Edgar Allan Guest. Anybody ever heard of it? Well, here you go. The Show Me Poem. I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day. I'd rather one would walk with me than merely show the way. The eye's a better pupil, more willing than the ear. Fine counsel is confusing, but example is always clear. And the best of all examples are the ones who live their creeds, for to see the good in others is what everyone needs. And the lessons you deliver may be wise and true, but I'd rather get my lesson by observing what you do. As we say in the stores, everybody's always watching. So please don't pick your nose if you're behind the counter. That's the end of it. It's all over. I'm Keith Hertling, and you are Shaping Up. Join me at 6 and 9. Wait a second. That was my tag for radio. Okay, gang, so I think you know what we have to do, so let's do it.